Hi there. It's time now for your friendly neighborhood economist, the show where you'll hear what's going on with the economy locally, nationally, and internationally, explained to you in plain English. Promise. This month on your friendly neighborhood economist, lots of exciting local economic news, as we have growing public concern over a plan to route high voltage electric power lines through Columbia and other neighboring counties, and local towns and cities are approving their budgets for next year. In national news, we look at where the Affordable Care Act is at, discuss the nomination of Janet Yellen to be the chair of the Federal Reserve, and look at economic inequality in the U.S. and Americans' attitudes towards it. All this and more, plus interesting music and plenty of quality time with me, your friendly neighborhood economist. Local news now. In a follow-up to a story I talked about last time, the Hudson Community Garden is getting a one-year lease and is in the process of forming a 501c3 nonprofit organization and fundraising to pay the rent. Looks like all the work put into the soil there over the last couple decades has gotten reprieve from the bulldozers. Hawthorne Valley has held two meetings with Hudson residents to talk about the possibility of a Hawthorne Valley-run grocery store and community learning center on Warren Street in Hudson. They're looking at 449 and the vacant lot next to it. They're looking for ideas from residents about what would be most useful. Also, they're looking into ways to make their food more affordable for low-income residents. Meanwhile, the Hudson Police Department and court may have a new home moving away from Warren Street, as the Common Council approved a proposal to buy the former location of Finish Line on Union Street for renovations. The Lafarge cement plant in Ravenna has secured an agreement with state and federal authorities to extend the deadline for its modernization until June 2016. If you don't know, cement manufacture is actually one of the biggest emitters of greenhouse gases, the biggest industrial emitters, and other atmospheric pollution. But the new dry kiln process being installed should reduce harmful emissions from the Ravenna facility. I can't say that I'm surprised to hear that a dollar store may be coming to Kinderhook, but this isn't what we need for economic development in the area, that's for sure. You can always say that people need a place where they can buy things cheaply, but I have two responses to that. First, those things are only cheap because someone else is paying the price for them, whether it's workers in sweatshops or children in environmentally devastated communities. Second, people need a place to buy things cheaply because there aren't decent jobs for them, a point not unrelated to my first point. This is why free trade, so-called, is not free. But beyond that, this is why capitalism doesn't work for most people, especially without limitations, as we've increasingly done it in the U.S. for the last 35 years. It's important not just to ask where are people going to work and shop if the dollar store doesn't move in, but why is it that people are in the position that prompt us to ask those questions in the first place? The housing market continues its recovery in New York, 6 years after the housing bubble in the U.S. began to collapse. Home sales in Columbia County were up 9.6%, and median sales prices increased by 5.6% between October 2012 and October 2013. In Greene County, sales rose 7.7%, and median sales prices rose 8.8%. So both counties are seeing recovery of housing values and prices, but they're both still lagging the state trend, which is a 23.9% increase in sales and 12.3% increase in median sales price statewide. Any time of year, paying attention to monthly changes in unemployment statistics can be misleading, and this month is no different. This time of year, retailers hire more people to help deal with the holiday buying binge, so unemployment tends to drop compared to earlier in the fall. So although the unemployment rate for Columbia County fell from 6.1% to 6% between September and October, it was much lower than last October. However, this isn't because more people are working. That number is the same at 28,500 this October as it was last year. There are fewer people unemployed, however, 1,800 compared to 2,100 last year. Those 300 people either left the area or left the labor force. In other words, they stopped looking for a job. In Greene County, the unemployment rate in October was down to 7.3% from 7.5% in September, and from 8.9% last October. About half of the year-over-year change is explained by an additional 300 employed people and by 400 fewer employed, with almost no change year-over-year in the size of the labor force. So things have improved a lot more in Greene County, although they're still suffering a higher unemployment rate than Columbia County. That was Anamanaguchi with Jetpack Blues Sunset Hues, which I totally ripped off from one of my favorite podcasts, The Nerdist. It's their theme song, and it makes me happy every time I hear it. That 8-bit arcade fanfare gets me every time. Now let's move on to some national news. First, your old favorite and mine, the Affordable Care Act. Despite the many and continuing attempts to get rid of, prevent, and sabotage the Affordable Care Act, even by the people whose job it was to make it happen, it continues to roll out. Whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, it is most definitely a thing. You may not hear everything there is to know that's important about the law from our elected leaders, or even me, but here's a clip from former Labor Secretary Robert Reich that lays three important points out in a somewhat partisan fashion.
Hi, I'm Robert Reich. Now, having failed to defeat the Affordable Care Act every other way, Republicans are now hell-bent on destroying it in Americans' minds. Every Republican in Washington has been programmed to use the word disaster whenever mentioning the act. The idea is to make the act so detestable it becomes the fearsome centerpiece of the midterm elections of 2014. Now, admittedly, the president provided Republicans with ammunition by botching the act's rollout. But the president and other Democrats should be stating and restating three larger truths that show the pettiness of the Republican attack. Truth number one, our healthcare system was a wreck. Ours has been the only healthcare system in the world designed to avoid sick people. For-profit insurers have spent billions of dollars finding and marketing their policies to healthy people while rejecting people with pre-existing conditions and routinely dropping coverage of policyholders who become seriously sick or disabled. Now, what else would you expect from corporations seeking to maximize profits? But the social consequences have been absolutely devastating. We've ended up with the most expensive healthcare system in the world. I mean, finding and marketing to healthy people is expensive, and corporate executives are expensive, and profits adequate to satisfy investors and shareholders are expensive. But this has been combined with the worst health outcomes of all rich countries, the highest rates of infant mortality, shortest lifespans, largest portions of populations never seeing a doctor and receiving no preventive care, most expensive uses of emergency rooms. We could not and cannot continue with this travesty of a healthcare system. Second truth, the Affordable Care Act is a modest solution. It still relies on private insurers, merely sets minimum standards and exchanges where customers can compare policies. It requires insurers to take people with pre-existing conditions and not abandon those who get seriously sick, and helps low-income people afford coverage. Now, a single-payer system would have been simpler and more efficient, but Republicans wouldn't even abide a public option to abide into something resembling Medicare. In the end, they would not even go along with the Affordable Care Act, which, ironically, was based on Republican ideas in the first place. And finally, the third truth is that we owe it to each other. The act depends fundamentally on a social compact in which those who are healthier and richer are willing to help those who are sicker and poorer. This kind of a social compact defines a society. The initial problems with the rollout are trifling compared to the wreckage of the current system, the modest but important step toward reform embodied in the act, and the moral imperative at the core of the act and of our society. Republicans have created a tempest out of trivialities. It's incumbent on Democrats, from the president on down, to show Americans the larger picture. Thanks.
That's right. Our healthcare system was messed up. The law doesn't really fix it much, but it does extend coverage to more people. And we owe it to each other to watch out for each other. You truly don't hear that much from anyone. Other things you don't hear much about include good news about implementation of the Affordable Care Act. You do hear plenty of bad news, though, don't you? The Federal Exchange website is apparently working much better now, with the new improved goal of making the website work smoothly for a, quote, vast majority of users, unquote, within reach. This does seem like a downgrade of the definition of success to me, but given how the thing started out, I'll take it. Here in New York, by Thanksgiving, the number of newly insured people was up to 76,000, again, still mostly as a result of the expansion of Medicaid, but also a large number through the New York State Insurance Exchange website. But insured is insured, and the more the better, especially children. And it appears that New York has achieved a big drop in the number of uninsured children, which is worth celebrating. Now, just in case you were thinking that there wasn't bad news about the Affordable Care Act, not to worry. Health insurance companies have your back.
Keeping our customers informed and aware of changes in premiums has always been a goal of the Health Insurers of America. In response to a volatile and uncertain market preceding healthcare reform legislation, your health insurance premiums can be expected to rise. In response to the volatile and uncertain market following the passage of the Affordable Care Act, your health insurance premiums can be expected to rise. The launch of a disastrous healthcare.gov website has introduced uncertainty into a volatile health insurance marketplace, and your premiums can be expected to rise. Due to the attempted Obamacare fix, the insurance marketplace will see volatility and uncertainty, and your premiums can be expected to rise. Following daily atmospheric darkening after Obamacare's rollout, the health insurance marketplace will be volatile and uncertain, and your premiums can be expected to rise. With morning sun rising over Obamacare, uncertainty and volatility will remain in the health insurance marketplace, and your premiums can be expected to rise. In response to seasonal hair growth on caterpillars after healthcare.gov launched, the health insurance marketplace will be volatile and uncertain, and your premiums can be expected to rise. As a result of gravitational forces beyond our control with Obamacare, the insurance marketplace will be volatile and uncertain, and your premiums can be expected to rise. Following the rise of carbon-based life forms, your premiums can be expected to rise.
Yes, that's right. It's as much of a shock to me as it must be to you all. Insurance companies apparently are not entirely forthcoming about the new plans available under the Affordable Care Act. Many people with insurance plans in the individual market have been getting letters about their plans being canceled, but counseling them to do nothing, and they would be moved into a new, more expensive plan. See, that's the law. Or is it? A simpler explanation is that insurance companies are banking on the confusion around the plan, which they are doing nothing to help alleviate, to help them make higher profits by tricking people into buying more expensive plans. So the fact is that the president's oft-repeated promise that if you like your old plan, you can keep it, turns out to only apply to those not crappy plans. And the president has backpedaled and will now be able to keep our old crappy plans for another year. Phew. And then insurance companies will totally spell out for us what the best options are for us, the consumer, and not for the profit-maximizing corporations we're buying the insurance from, see? Isn't this so much better than Medicare for All? In a local twist on the Affordable Care Act rollout, healthcare costs for the 2014 Greene County budget are slated to rise by $2 million, with a quarter of that coming from administrative expenses of implementing the Affordable Care Act and from extending coverage to children of employees up to the age of 26. Which is another provision of the Affordable Care Act. Unfortunately, we don't have the information about where the other $1.5 million increase is coming from, but there are always unintended consequences of any change in policy, and this is one of them. Will there be more ACA news next month? I'm betting yes. That was Tangerine Dream with Love on a Real Train, which you may remember from the movie Risky Business, the movie that gave us Tom Cruise. I'm going to move on now to talk a little bit about economic inequality. A Pew Research poll about international comparisons of attitudes towards economic inequality was recently released. It showed, among other things, that the U.S., which has among the highest levels of economic inequality, inequality of income and wealth in the advanced industrialized nations, also has among the lowest level of concern about economic inequality. This may not come as news to many, but there it is. It is unusual that countries with lower inequality are more concerned about it. Or it may be that because they are concerned, they address it. We, on the other hand, cut funding for food stamps, because that's what Jesus would do. As it happens, though, Americans haven't always been this nonchalant about inequality in the U.S. This summer I spoke to two Italian economists at a conference I attended in Bari, Italy, about their research on U.S. attitudes towards inequality using the General Social Survey, which is carried out by the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago. Here's the interview.
This is your friendly neighborhood economist reporting from the fifth meeting of the Society for the Study of Economic Inequality in Bari, Italy. I'm speaking with Maria Grazia Pitao and Roberto Zelli of Sapienza University in Rome, also in Italy. The two of them have presented a paper on the evolution of Americans' attitudes towards redistribution of income. Hello, Grazia. Hello, Roberto.
Hello.
So, Grazia, thanks both of you for taking time to talk about your paper with the people in back in the States. And so, Grazia, could you tell me a little bit about what questions you were trying to answer with your paper?
Hi, our main question was if the personal attitudes of American individuals toward redistribution was changing over time or not. And beside the evidence from the raw data that show a stability trend over time, what we found is that there are some predictors that actually changed a lot over the last decades. We used data from the General Social Survey from a period that goes that starts in 1978 to 2012. So it's a very long period of time. And actually, again, our main question was: Have the individual attitudes toward the distribution changed over time or not? It was the main question we wanted to address.
Great, thank you. So, Roberto, what did you find?
Well, what we found is that there is a sort of flat trend in terms of propensity towards redistribution in the United States, just less than 50% of people interviewed are supporting redistribution. They think that government should take some actions to reduce income disparities in the income distribution. But despite this flat trend, there are some predictors that are more important over time. For instance, personal income is more important over time. That is, of course, rich people are more adverse to redistribution, but they are more and more adverse over time. Mm-hmm. So a rich person in the 70s has a probability of supporting a redistribution by around 30%, 40%, sorry. But at the end of the period, his probability of supporting redistribution was 20%. And the other thing, the striking result that we got, is that in terms of education, all things equal, a highly educated person in the United States with a university qualification, for instance, increases over time the support for redistribution. Instead, a low-educated people decreases the support of redistribution over time. And another result that we got is that there is a sort of polarization of ideologies about, of beliefs about redistributions, and they are summarized by the political identification in the sense that the difference between Democrats and Republicans is wide over time, becomes greater over time, and also ethnicity matters, but it was much more important in the late 70s, early 80s than now. Black people tend to support more redistribution, but they used to do it more in the past than now. So if you are a Democrat, for instance, independent, even if you are white or black, you have the same propensity towards redistribution.
What matters more is the political view instead of the ethnicity.
And at the beginning of the period, that there was a gap.
There was a gap. A Democrat, a white Democrat, and a black Democrat have different views about propensity of redistribution and at the beginning of the period.
Yeah.
But now no more.
So, in one factor, you know, in terms of the income, you know, the group that's more and more having more and more of the income, the high income groups, are becoming less and less interested in redistributing.
Yeah.
So the more they get, the less they want to share. That's
exactly.
Interesting. But the other interesting part is the kind of low income. Now, is there much overlap between low income and low education, lower education level, and high income? Because both of those groups are becoming less favorable towards redistribution. Was there much overlap between those two groups, or is it separate?
Just separate. We didn't allow for interactions for that.
Yes, but what we can say is that allowing for interactions, we didn't show in the paper, but allowing for interaction, if you are low educated but rich, you are very adverse to redistribution.
Mm-hmm.
If you are highly educated and rich, you are less adverse to redistribution.
Okay, so it works both ways.
Yes.
I see. Okay. That sounds good. Interesting.
So one way to look at this is that over the last 35 years or so, the rich have gotten richer because of policies that enabled the redistribution of wealth and income upwards. Zelli and Patel's research shows that this was accompanied by an increase in aversion to redistribution downwards among those getting richer, who were simultaneously becoming more politically powerful because of their wealth. It seems like a bit of a vicious cycle, unfortunately.
See, I got a ball of lip for property, so I slip my beanie on sloppily and promenade out to take up a collection. I got game like I read the directions. I'm wishing that I had an automobile as I feel the cold wind rush past. But let me state that I'm a hustler for real, so you know I got the stolen bus pass. Just as the bus pulls up and I step to the rear, this old lady look like she drank a 40 or 50. I see my old school partner say his brother got popped. Pay my respects, can you ring the bell? We came to my stop. The street light reflects off the urine on the ground, which reflects off the hamburger sign that turns round, which reflects off the chrome of the BMW, which reflects off the fact that I'm broke. Now what the hell is new? I need new. I spot the mark walking in the tweed suit. I'm in his butt quicker than a kick from a grease boot. Eased up slow in the street. Could tell he was suspicious by the way he slid his feet. Didn't want to muck up the come up, so I smiled, winked my eyes, said, hey, how's it hanging, guy? Bumped into his shoulder, but he passed with no reaction. Damn, this punk trick had hella Andrew Jackson.
Get down. footsteps echo in the darkness. My teeth clench tight like a fist in the cold sharpness. I look down and I hear my stomach growling. Step to Burger King to attack it like a Shaolin. I never pay for things that I could get by doing dirt. Linger to the girl cashier and start to flirt. All up in her face and her breath was like murder. Damn the things I do for a free hamburger.
Well, you got my number, you gonna call me tonight?
It depends, it's them burgers attached to a price. I'm just kidding, I'ma call, even write you love letters. Thanks for the burgers, put me up with a Dr. Pepper.
That's cool, you want some ice?
Yeah, and some fries would be hella nice.
Damn, my manager is coming to pay off, okay? Have a nice day.
I'm about to hit anyway. Like a million bucks, I'll be the flyest motherfucker in the Afro in a tux. My arm is at a right angle up, silver tray in my hand. May I interest you in some caviar, ma'am? My eye shoots round the room, there and here. Noticing the diamonds in the chandelier. Background Barry Manilow, Copacabana, and a strong damn set of stogies from Havana. What no place where a brother might been. Snobby old ladies drinking champagne with rich white men. Alright then, let's begin this. Nights like this is good for business. 5 minutes in the mix, notice several different clicks. Talking, giggling, a script, and one big baller in betwixt. And everybody else jacking him, throttling. Found out later he on Coca-Cola bottling. Talking to a black man, who's he confused? Me looking hella bougie. Booty all tight and sedity. Recognize him as the mayor of my city, who treats young black men like Frank Nitty. Mr. Coke said to Mr. Mayor, you know we got a process like Ice-T's hair. We put up the funds for your election campaign. And waiter, can you bring the champagne? Our real estate firm says opportunities arousing to make some condos out of low-income housing immediately. We need some media heat to say that gangs run the street and then we bring in the police fleet. Harass and beat everybody till they look inebriated. When we buy the land, these black folks gonna appreciate it. Don't worry about the urban league or Jesse Jackson. My man that owns Marlboro donated a fat sum. That's when I step back some to contemplate what you know. Sat down, wrestle with my thoughts like a sumo. Ain't no one player that could beat this lunacy. Ain't no hustler on the street could do a whole community. This is how deep it can get. It reads macaroni on my birth certificate. Puttin' Tang is my middle name, but I can't hang. I'm getting hustled, only knowing half the gang.
That was The Coup with Fat Cats and Bigga Fish. That's going to do it for me for this month. I hope you'll join me again next time. And I'll be talking about Janet Yellen, the new Federal Reserve Chair, next time, along with the Affordable Care Act, I'm sure. Maybe more power line stuff. We'll see what happens in the next month. Take care and happy holidays. Till next month. This is your friendly neighborhood economist, out. This has been your friendly neighborhood economist. I can be heard on the second and fourth Tuesday of every month or anytime online. Check me out on WGXC.org, on Facebook, just search for your friendly neighborhood economist, on my Tumblr blog, yfneconomist.tumblr.com, or on Twitter at yfneconomist. If you've got a question you've been dying to ask a sympathetic economist, send it to me through one of those venues or email me at yfneconomist@gmail.com. Please send in your questions and suggestions. I'd love to incorporate them into the show. Until next time, bye-bye. Your Friendly Neighborhood Economist is a production of WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, and Thomas Masterson. That's me.